Well, today I wanted to talk a little bit about, current affairs, what's going on in the world, what's going on here, are we headed in the right direction? Sometimes it can be kind of discouraging to talk about these things, but, you know, we are told that we're to watch and we're to take note of the signs of the times, and I think it's in... We don't need to go there, but it's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, 1 through 5. It says we're not in darkness, but sons of the light. So the events of the end time shouldn't take us in total surprise. We need to be aware of what's happening in the world and what the biblical implications of it are. And it's hard to know where to start. So many things are going on. And, of course, we just had an election. I think our hope, and the hope of many, I think many prayers were said, and was that we could maybe change our direction, get back more in a more godly direction, get back even to following our Constitution that we have. And it really didn't work out. We seem like we're still at the same leaders. We're more or less still on the same path. And... So that's a little worrisome, or more than a little, I think. Because if we look around the world, we're seeing some of the fruits of what our leaders are doing, especially in the Middle East. We see a lot of the Middle East is just kind of on fire right now. And we were involved in overthrowing some of the leaders, especially in Libya and in Egypt. And most people would say, well, they weren't good leaders, and maybe that's true. But especially in Egypt, they had a leader, Mubarak, that at least kept stability there. At least he abided by his treaty with Israel, and I think he helped to bring a certain amount of stability. And now that he's gone, they have an Islamic extremist, I think, in charge, and we already see the problems that's beginning to cause, especially with Israel. And in Libya, again, us and I guess Europe was involved in bringing down that government, and we couldn't really say it was a good government, a friend to us, but now they've got another Islamic extremist government there, and we've already seen what happens. We've had our embassy, our consulate sacked and burned, our ambassador murdered, and three of the bodyguards, three of the men protecting him, and others injured, with no resolution to it at all. We don't even know who did it, and probably won't know. And of course, Syria is in turmoil. They're having all kind of demonstrations in Jordan, which was a kind of stable country on Israel's eastern border, and it's just not looking good. And right now we see, at this very moment, I expect Israel and Hamas are exchanging rocket fire. And that could, escalate to something bigger. We don't know. And then we look at Europe and we don't see much of it because they don't show the news. But what we do see is several countries over there are really in turmoil. Just riots in the street to people. They don't know what happened. All of a sudden, their standard of living went down like that. And even hear reports in Greece, people going hungry, what they call dumpster diving, looking for food. In Germany, the German people probably getting tired of trying to foot the bill to keep these countries afloat. So it doesn't look good there either. And then when we look at our own situation here in America, we've got pretty much the same leadership, and we kind of see a divided people. The election showed that up. The politicians play on that division, and it seems to work. Divide rich and poor, male and female, young and old, all kind of divides, ethnic, racial divides, and It doesn't do anything really to solve our problems, but it does get people in power. And of course, we've just seen that we have, of course, a scandal. One of our military leaders that had been appointed to the CIA, now he's an alleged affair. We don't know really what it amounts to, but it has caused him to resign or be fired. And from that same situation, one of our top generals is under fire for the same reason. So I would say the morale in the military is a little down and confused at this point. And we can see that we're not really respected or feared by the tyrants of the world, is what happened in Libya. They weren't afraid to attack our embassy. And during the election, we also heard that, at least I noticed, and I hadn't really heard that before, but they've downsized our Navy already to the point where we're back almost like we was in 1916, as far as number of ships. Now they'd say, well, they're more powerful ships, which they are. But numbers do matter sometimes. We had a 600-ship Navy maybe a decade or two ago. And if you stop and think about it, in the Revolutionary War, when we were trying to win our independence from Great Britain, they sent a 400-ship Navy to our shores. And believe me, that wasn't all their Navy. That was what they sent here to support their troops, a 400-ship Navy. So it kind of shows you that we're shrinking down a little bit as far as our power like that. And then when you look at the financial, well, you look at the spiritual thing too. I guess I shouldn't skip that. Spiritually, Christianity is pretty well fractured. So many different beliefs, so many different churches. We don't really have a united voice. And so much of Christianity, Protestant Christianity, they don't even believe it's important to keep God's laws. They think, well, they've been done away. They've been nailed to the cross and so many things like that. It makes it easier for divisions and weakness there. And as far as our economy goes, well, our economy is barely sputtering along. They say we have maybe 2% growth. I don't know if that's true, but anyway, we're facing what they call the financial cliff, where if they don't do something, the tax rates that we've had for about the last 8 years will expire and they will go back up in a time when we're really hurting financially anyway. And the Congress and the President can't seem to quite agree on what to do about it. And another thing that is worrisome, most people, I think, don't really look at or think about it, but in the last 4 years, we haven't even had a budget. To think of the leading power in the world, if we are that still, to go 4 years and can't even agree on a budget. And I think at least in the last two years when a budget was put forward, it didn't get a single vote when the President put a budget forward. It didn't get a single yes vote, not even from the Democrats, because it was so so bloated, nobody wanted to vote for it and face the criticism. And then we look at the debt that we're saddled with. You know, it wasn't, seemed like a month or two ago, they were saying we had a $15 trillion debt. And now it's over $16 trillion. And we can't really get our minds around how much is that. How much is $16 trillion? It's a lot. I think I heard it put that it was like $130,000 for each household. I think household, not individual. I'm not sure, but if we had to pay it off, and I think we'd be hard to come up, pressed to come up with it. And that $16 trillion is just what's on the books. It doesn't account the unfunded mandates like Social Security and Medicare, which is many, many times bigger. So we do have many problems, and it seems safe to say we're not really headed in the right direction. But let's turn to Isaiah chapter 3 and just see what, if there was anything that seems to fit our situation that was prophesied about this long ago. Isaiah 3, I think verse 12. Well, let's start in verse 1. It says, "Woe to the wicked, disaster is upon them. They will be paid back for what their hands have done." It says, "Youths oppress my people, women rule over them. O my people, your guides lead you astray and turn you from the path. The Lord takes his place in court. He rises to judge the people. The Lord enters into judgment against the elders and leaders of his people. It is you who have ruined my vineyard and plundered the poor, and plundered from the poor is in your houses." And that, I know that was for ancient Israel, but it seems to fit what's happening with our leaders today. And turn over to Isaiah 5, chapter 5, just a page or so over. Verse 20. It says, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who puts darkness for light and light for darkness, and who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." And we seem to be seeing some of that. People that calls good evil and evil good, tries to root out any mention or influence of God from our government or public places. And skip down to verse 25. It said, "Therefore the Lord's anger burns against his people. His hand is raised and he strikes them down, and the mountains shake." So because of what we're doing, where our leaders are leading us, it causes, and of course, we can't be completely acquitted either, because we're not, as a nation, we're not really following God's commandments. But it brings, arouses God's anger, and it's hard to imagine that he continue to bless us in that, in those endeavors. And let's turn over to Isaiah 9. It's just a couple more pages over there. Isaiah 9, verse 9. Well, I'll start in 8. "The Lord has sent a message against Jacob. It will fall on Israel. All the people will know it. Ephraim and the inhabitants of Samaria, who say with pride and arrogance of heart, 'The bricks have fallen down, but we will rebuild with dressed stone. The fig trees have been felled, but we will replace them with cedars.'" So we see an arrogance there. And this was, again, was ancient Israel. They, instead of accepting God's correction and trying to turn and do right, they're just saying, "Well, the bricks have fallen down, and but we'll rebuild with dressed stone." They're trusting in themselves and their own power. And you know, this very verse was read, I think, by the mayor of New York when at a ceremony after 9/11, after the Twin Towers were knocked down. I really don't expect he probably read it as an arrogant thing. It was just to, I guess, probably to encourage people, "We'll rebuild." But it's strange that this very verse would be read there. It probably would be better to, you know, to look at something like that and say, "Well, we need to beseech God for his favor and try to do better." But anyway, that's maybe a little too much doom and gloom. Sometimes reality is harsh, and when you look at reality, it can be kind of harsh. And we won't go there because we don't have the time, but there is lots of hope in the Bible. That's the only place where there is hope, really, in the Bible. Isaiah 11 is one chapter that a person can read. It talks about Israel will be restored and righteous leaders will have. And also Isaiah 65:17-25 talks about a new heaven, a new earth. And Hosea 11, the whole chapter, God's love for Israel. And also Isaiah 11:1-9, the kingdom of God. So those things are tremendously good news. Thank you very much.
Okay, I want to read a quote as we start this message. And this quote is from John Adams, our second president, and I suppose one of the more religious presidents. "Our Constitution," John Adams said, "was made only for moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." He also said, "Power always thinks that it's doing God's service when it is actually violating all his laws." So the title of this is Appreciating God's Help. In an Age of Gathering Evil and Decadence. There's a new book, and then in this book, the author does something different. He writes a book on leadership, but his focus is not only on the leaders like most books. His focus is also on the followers and the importance of the followers. He calls it the toxic triangle. You know, he studies, you know, countries with evil people like Stalin, and we could elaborate. There are tons of evil countries, evil leaders. So he's got plenty of material. And he looks at the toxic triangle. It's one, a destructive leader, big ego, narcissistic, and some level of charisma. Number two, one we're going to focus on today, is susceptible followers. Followers with negative core values, low maturity, blind conformers who blindly follow, and kind of his people that are complicit in various criminal activities for their own selfish advantage. Those are the followers. And the third part of the toxic triangle, and this is the one that got my attention, absence of checks and balances on the leaders. And I thought to myself, we don't have any more checks on our leader because the press is supposed to do the job of watchdog. But what if the press is not doing a watchdog type job and Congress is divided and they're soon going to be making changes in the Supreme Court and it's very unpredictable? And obviously, some wouldn't agree with my assessment, but we don't actually have any checks and balances that are strongly in place. Now, think about that for a minute. When you think about the toxic triangle. And but I want to focus on number two, the people. Roughly a majority, 50-52%. Maybe you're going to say, what about the people that didn't vote? And maybe that's hard to measure. But we would have to say they may not be enthusiastic, but they're... Americans are blindly following, and there are a lot of people that are miseducated. You hear these shows where they ask people real basic questions about the Constitution, the three branches of government, the Declaration of Independence, and who was, in some cases, who was George Washington, or who's buried in Grant's tomb, and they don't have the slightest idea. And I'm thinking, whoa, you can talk about ignorance. What do they teach in public school nowadays? Then I think of the historical examples like the Roman Empire. As you know, the Roman Empire started, the Roman emperors to buy support, started giving away free food and circuses. That's what they called the various events in the Great Colosseum in Rome. And they got free shows, weird things and bloody things, but they kept the people fed and entertained. And basically, the people of Rome became spoiled. They were too weak to be soldiers and easily manipulated. At least that's one of the reasons for the fall of the Roman Empire. Now, God warned Israel of the oppression and danger of big central government and worldly ideas. And I want to just picture something for you in a minute. When Israel first came out of Egypt, they had one of the greatest leaders. Actually, he's often compared with Christ in some respects, and that was Moses, one of the greatest leaders in the history of the world. And yet a lot of things went bad for Israel because the people did not appreciate God. They had a wrong heart. Let's go to 1 Samuel 8, because we're focusing on the people now as part of the problem. 1 Samuel 8, and as you know, they use excuses, but 1 Samuel 8, verse 7, they told the judge, Samuel, that they wanted a king. And verse 7, the Lord said unto Samuel, "Hearken unto the voice of the people, and all that they say unto you, for they have not rejected you," that is Samuel, the high priest, "they have rejected me," meaning, you know, the God of Israel, "that I should not reign over them." And then he tells them all the bad things that a central government is going to bring. And I want to just put this in context. Prior to this point, Israel was ruled by basically judges who were more priestly type men. Maybe some weren't as good as others, but for the most part, there was no central government, nothing like the IRS, and really, they just didn't have big military. They raised it when they needed it. Basically, they were led by generally a priest or someone who played that role that was inspired by God, and God ruled through that priestly man, and, you know, Samuel and Moses and others. So really, God was their king. And in a sense, the Israelites were saying, "No, no, no. We want to be like all the other countries in the world. We want a big central government. We want a king. We want that kind of thing." And they weren't rejecting really Samuel or even his kids so much as they were rejecting God. Let's go back to Exodus because I think we can see it clearly in Exodus. The people had long for pagan rule, right from the very beginning. You know, the odd thing is, as soon as they start having trouble, the Israelites, everything wasn't perfect, they start listening to leaders. If you ever watched the Ten Commandments movie, there's a famous actor who plays one of the bad leaders. You can watch it. The people would start listening to bad leaders who would say something as outrageous. "We were better off in Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt." It's almost like human nature saying, "Let's go back to sin and slavery to bad things instead of following God." But in a sense, that's what happened. And I think, in a sense, America, maybe we'll have to see how many election cycles, and so I'm saying this as a possibility. Maybe America is sending a message that goes, and God is allowing it, because I think God wants America to learn that democracy is not such a good form of government. Now, you're going to say, "What do you mean?" Remember, Winston Churchill said in one of his famous quotes, "Democracy is a terrible form of government. It's just the best that we've got." And obviously, it's better than any other human form of government. But, you know, of course, Churchill had a lot of bad experience with democracy in England, and they voted a lot of bad things, and America is going to do the same thing. And what we're going to be voting in, and I think at least many people have already really said it in their own way, we're voting in socialism, radical environmentalism, earth and animal worship, relativism, and evolution as guiding principles of the government, and big government to run your life. I really believe, at least for a good chunk of Americans, that's what we're in for. And big government abuses its power, and that's basically what Samuel tells the Israelites in the book of Samuel. And they still say, "We want a king anyway." And God let them have what they wanted. So I believe America will see the abuse of big government as well. We will see. So let's go to Exodus, the 32nd chapter, because I want to make a point here about the people are part of the problem as well. Exodus 32, verse 1, And when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down out of the mountain, apparently it was 40 days going on to the 41st day. If they had just waited another day or two more, Moses was on his way down, but they didn't. The people gathered themselves unto Aaron and said to him, "Make us gods," little g, plural, "which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him." Now, there's not a lot of details given, but my guess is it went something like this. They really never really loved or understood or appreciated the true God of Israel. They never did. And their first excuse, or one of their first opportunities at least, actually they grumbled even a little bit before this, but actually 10 times in that first year or so, they tested God's patience, as Moses explains when you read this book and Deuteronomy and Numbers. 10 times they tested God. And this is one of the biggest ones. After the delay, and they said, well, who knows, maybe God killed Moses in the mountain. Maybe he fell in a gorge in that dangerous mountain. He's gone. Now we can do what we really want to do, which is paganism. And it said they had music and they rose up to play. Play could mean a lot more than just, you know, playing soccer. It was probably a lot of really pagan-type sinful things were probably going on in this idolatry. going on to verse 7, the Lord said to Moses, "Get you down." Now, you know, Moses is getting all this information, the Ten Commandments and other things from God for 40 days. And all of a sudden, God says to Moses, "Get you down. For your people," God's putting the people on Moses now, "for your people, which you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They've turned aside out of the way quickly, which I commanded them, and they've made them a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, and said, 'These be the gods, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.' And the Lord said unto Moses, 'I have seen this people. Behold, it is a stiff-necked people.'" And he said, "Let me alone, Moses. I am mad because I'm going to wipe them out and, you know, fulfill prophecy with just Moses' kids." Now, when God said, "I have seen these people and they're stiff-necked, evil, and wicked," and other bad things happen after this. So we have, God was certainly correct when he sized up the people of Israel as being bad. Remember, they had Moses, one of the greatest leaders ever. And even after this incident, when Moses was with them, several occasions, they start to stone Moses and Aaron, and God has to intervene. The people were really bad. And here's what I think upset God the most. God had performed a ton of miracles before they got to Mount Sinai. I'm just going to go through one, but there are a bunch of them. It appeared that, and God allowed it this way because he wanted to get vengeance on the Egyptians, that the Egyptians had them cornered with the Red Sea and mountains on both sides, and Pharaoh changed his mind. His army was going to destroy the Israelites. And God told Moses, "Don't worry about it. Just lift your rod up." And the Red Sea parted. Now, this is the ocean parting. Water walls on both sides. The wind dried out the bed, and the Israelites all night long walked through the ocean to the other side. Now, think of, and a pillar of fire held back the Egyptian army and confused them. And then once the Israelites got all the way through, God removed that pillar of fire, and Pharaoh, like the idiot, took his army into the gorge, into the Red Sea. And then when they got, you know, right in the middle of it, God told Moses, "Okay, Moses, you know, do this with your," at least that's how it looked in the movie. And you can imagine the Red Sea just crushed the Egyptian army. And the Israelites all saw that, and they got to pick up all the debris from the Egyptian army, as well as all the miracles they saw in Egypt, and manna from heaven and water from rocks. Now, they saw all those miracles. Shouldn't they have asked themselves, "God took care of us like a chicken takes care of its little baby chicks, and bringing us out of Egypt and bringing us to Mount Sinai"? Shouldn't they have looked at the character of the God behind the miracles and said, if he can do all that and he took care of us, we don't have to worry about whether Moses delays coming down. We don't have to worry about whether the water's here on time or not. You know, they maybe could ask, you know, Moses to speed up a few things, but they were always testing God. They were always in a bad and angry mood, and I call it a worldly, impatient, we don't trust God mood. They should have looked at the character of the God behind the miracles. And if they had done that, they would have seen that's a God of love, mercy, who takes care of his people. But the Israelites didn't. And, you know, God didn't let them get away with it. He brought their children into the promised land and let the adults die in the desert, as you know. But they never looked at the character behind it. And also, these people heard the voice of God. And that was a big giant cloud. They didn't actually see God's face, but it was like fire and lightning and a big giant cloud on the top of Mount Sinai. And as they stood at the base of the mountain, those 2 or 3 million Israelites heard God's voice boom out the Ten Commandments. And it was scary. And yet in less than 40 days, they were pressing and threatening Aaron that we want to go back to idols, which God has specifically said, you know, don't make any image and worship it. So it was the people's fault, at least in this example. verse 22, and Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord wax hot. Thou knowest the people, that they are set on mischief. In other words, when God got back and asked Aaron, he says, Aaron, why did you let him pressure you into this? Aaron said, you know how bad these people are. Even Aaron and Moses were learning rather quickly how bad the people were. They wanted paganized decadence. They didn't appreciate godliness. They never looked deeply at the God who had given them all the wonderful things and brought them out of Egypt like a chicken taking care of his baby chicks. They never appreciated God. So part of what I want to say this afternoon is we need to appreciate God and appreciate the God behind the power. And as we see the world gathering toward evil decadence and the toxic triangle of leadership in the world, at least I think it is. Maybe America will have a revival and everything will go back the other way. But if not, I see us heading toward the toxic triangle, no checks and balances, and a lot of people who are willing for a few freebies to blindly go where they shouldn't go. We should appreciate God more. And as we go into the Thanksgiving weekend, be more thankful and see the awesomeness of God and realize that God will take care of us and he'll put us in a place of safety or wherever, whatever he wants us to do. And this much I do know. Know this, that God will not let us be tried beyond what we can handle. So just know that and trust God. That's what the Israelites didn't. Let's go to Romans 1. This idea of how the world has not appreciated God. And Paul, in his statement to the Romans, is real basic stuff. He starts off by talking about how the world, and that includes many people in this country as well, do not appreciate God. Romans 1, verse 18. Romans 1:18, and knowest his will, and approvest the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law. Oops, that's the wrong one. I'm sorry. Romans 1:18. I read the wrong verse. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness, unrighteousness of men, who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest to them, for God has showed it to them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power God has, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful. They didn't appreciate God, but became vain in their imagination, for their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Someday we're going to laugh at evolution. They changed the glory of the incorruptible God as an image made like unto corruptible man, birds, four-footed beasts, and creeping things. We're going to have policies that tend to worship Mother Earth and the animal world. And evolution is a big lie. It really is a really big lie. Do you know that it's such a big lie that if you were to, I'm going to, like truth has fallen in the street. Let me give you some idea what a big lie that evolution is. One scientist said if back in Darwin's day, they didn't know all the intricate biochemistry that they know now inside every cell of every animal and plant. And they studied, of course, one cell animals specifically. They said one cell, Darwin thought, was sort of like a hut in complexity. But a cell is more like a super shuttle. That's how complex every cell is. Every cell has a gigabyte of programming information. You know, and programming is binary. That is binary math. You know, a signal is either on or off. And that's how they get all the programming. Well, the same thing is actually true of our genes. And this double helix, anyway, there are different parts of it. It's hard to describe. But you can liken it to a binary computer code of information and tons of it. And evolution says natural selection has created what we have. The only problem with that is natural selection reduces information. It doesn't increase it. Let me give you an example. Say you take the wild wolf, who has all the genetic mixes for all kinds of wolves. Well, if you put them in an extremely hot climate, the only ones who are likely to survive are those with very short hair genes that can handle the heat. Then you've lost all the other genetic information. Or the opposite of that, you put them in a very arctic, cold climate, the only ones that can survive natural selection are those with exceptionally thick, long hair. You've lost all that genetic information. But how did all the genetic information get in there that controls it? In other words, you and I have the same genes as a whale, but our bodies grew to be what we are, and the whale grew to be what it is, but they all have the same genetic system. And you look at something like a bird, there are tons of them. I'm watching out the window there behind me. But you realize birds have hollow bones, feathers are unique and intricate, especially lightweight, and there are like ducks who are like a boat and a airplane. Many can fly thousands of miles. You tell me you don't see design in that? You see design in everything. It is outrageous. They say that the amount of genetic information in one cell is 1,000 pages of instructions if you were trying to write a computer code. That's in the genes of every, that's unbelievable. That's all I can say. That is unbelievable. Going on back to Romans 24 and 25, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness, to the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever and ever. Amen. Verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despisers, despiteful, proud boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. That is the direction the world's going to be going in as it becomes more and more worldly, and it affected the Israelites too. And I think if we realize how great our God is, but not just how great He is in creating this great creation and the earth and the planets, but also He gave His only Son for us. That's the greatest thing He could give, how much love He has for us, and try to see the God behind it. The God who programmed all life to begin with. What a job God has done. Wow. I'm debating telling you. I'm going to tell you this really corny joke and laugh anyway. It's really a bad one. But this police pulls over a speeder, and he says, "I want to see your license." The driver said, "I don't have a license. It's been suspended. I've had 5 DUIs." The officer is shocked. "Well, let me see your registration." "Well, actually, I don't have registration on this car. I stole it." The officer's even more shocked. "Open up the glove compartment. See what the registration is." "Well, I put a gun in there when I shot the owner and put her body in the trunk." The officer's really shocked. He pushes his little mic button. He calls the station and asks for backups. "We've got some dangerous people here." In a few minutes, more police cars come, and the police captain comes out. And he walks over to the driver, and he says, he says, "Show me your license." The guy shows him his license, and it's the right license. It's legitimate. "Show me your registration." He shows him the registration. He says, "Now, open the glove box, but be very gently, because I'm told there's a gun." He opens the glove box. There's nothing in there but papers. He says, "Pop your trunk." He pops the trunk. There's nothing in there. Just pretty much empty. The captain is shocked. And then the guy says, "Listen, I know the other officer told you that I didn't have a driver's license, didn't have registration, had a gun in the box and a body in the trunk. And I bet he also told you I was speeding too, didn't he?" I would use that corny joke to say we live in a world where the truth has fallen in the streets. Our media is lying to us. After this Benghazi thing, at least my opinion, the media is lying to us, and they know they're lying to us. It's not like they've been deceived. I think they know it. It's all a cover-up, and they're part of it, and they don't mind. And this will lead to more toxic leadership. And a lot of the American people don't mind lies. They don't care. At least if they think I can get more freebies and if they look at a certain candidate and they say, I think that candidate stands for financial responsibility and a little more morality. I don't think I like those things. And they vote the opposite of that. That tells you something about the American people. And if I'm wrong and the voters move in a much more righteous direction, I'll be happy and glad to admit it. Glad to admit it. But I think just like the Israelites were the problem, and God saw it right after he took them out of Egypt. He saw it, and God was right. And many of these horrible governments with horrible dictators, certainly the dictator takes some of the blame, and I'm not in any way whitewashing them, but their followers made it possible by the way in which they were ready to believe a lie. And he tells them to hate somebody, persecute somebody else, and they eagerly go and do it. And you think about it for a minute. I mean, the leader can only do so much if the people are moral and have character and are not so easily manipulated. So some of the blame for many of these horrible governments have done horrible things is the people themselves. And I know it's terrible to say that, and I'm not trying to be unsympathetic, but that's what the guy said in the book, and I'm kind of convinced that he is right. It's the people should take much of the blame. Let's go to Psalms 119 as we get ready to wrap this up. In Psalms 119, we're going to go to Psalms 119, verse 13 and 14. "With my lips have I declared all the judgments of your mouth, and I have rejoiced in the way of thy testimonies as much as in all your riches. And I will meditate on your precepts and have respect unto your ways. And I will delight myself in your statutes, and I'll not forget your words." Let's go to Psalms 139. "14. 139, 14. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works that my soul knows right well. My substance was not hid from you when I was made secretly and curiously in the lowest parts of the earth. So David appreciated God. Psalms 14, verse 1. Psalms 14, verse 1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. And they, matter of fact, if you talk to some biologists and you mention intelligent design, they get angry. You're thinking, why are they so angry? One reason is because every time they do more research, they discover more complexity of the individual cell, more evidence of design. You know, if evolution was so easily provable, why are they so upset? But they're frightened to death. They do not want to hear anything about God under any circumstances. Psalms 52, verse 1. Psalms 52, verse 1. Why boast you yourself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endures continually. Verse 8 and 9, Psalms 52, verse 8. But I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. This is David. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise you forever because you have done it, and I will wait on your name. For it is good before thy saints. David trusted in God, and we need to trust in God. The Israelites didn't trust in God. We need to believe in God, trust in God. And the best way to endure the bad days that are likely to come and be safe is to trust in God and know that God will keep us safe and get closer to God as we see the evil triangle grow.